crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome to Watch Jerusalem. I'm Brent Nachtigall, your host. We're coming to you today from Jerusalem, Israel, as per usual. Last week, we had Christopher Reams filling in on the show, an archaeologist who's right now based in the United Kingdom. Thank you very much, Chris, for taking that show. You can go back and listen to that if you would like. That is located at Watch Jerusalem. You can just hit the webcast tab and hear all of our previous episodes on demand. Well, here in Israel this week and even into next week, there's going to be a great analysis across the papers, a great degree of analysis taking place over what Mr. Trump is planning on accomplishing in his 26 hours that he's here on May 22nd and 27th. This is his first obvious trip to Israel since he's been president. And even though he is the most pro-Israel president ever, probably, we have Israelis very nervous over his trip. And why is that? Well, it seems that he is making the Palestinian-Israeli peace process one of his primary goals of his presidency, to try and broker peace where no man has been able to do that before. And that, of course, if he increases his pressure on both sides to pursue peace, well, that is going to increase the pressure on Israel mainly to make concessions that are very difficult for them to make, because it would put in jeopardy their own survival, their own safety. So we'll have plenty to talk about, plenty to write about on Watch Jerusalem about that topic, and you can check into the website over the next couple of weeks about that. Today, though, I want to comment on an article that appeared in the Jerusalem Post last week, and it was written by Isi Liebler. He's a really prominent Jewish figure, especially a Jewish figure in Australia in the past, and he writes a weekly column, or a biweekly, well, twice a week he'll write a column for the Jerusalem Post called Candidly Speaking. And he wrote one on May 9th. It's entitled, Candidly Speaking, Nine Challenges Confronting Israel. And he begins this way. Not since the creation of the state has Israel found itself in such an advantageous position. While a genuine peace settlement with the Palestinians remains a distant mirage and the threat from Iran is ever present, Israel has emerged as a regional superpower both militarily and economically. And now, finally, the United States seems willing to exert its muscle to neutralize the overtly biased behavior of the international community towards the Jewish state. Then he writes, but we still face major challenges, which can be summarized as follows. So he sets this up focusing on the position that Israel finds itself in right now after decades and decades of, well, since 1948, having their state, and they do find themselves in the most powerful position that they've ever been in, militarily and also economically. And yet they still face threats. And he's going to summarize a few threats that they face. And I'll cover those briefly here. But it's his conclusion that I want to focus on mainly. But before we get to that, I just want to run down a couple of these threats, which really are threats that Israel does face. And the first one he notes here is the relationship with the Trump administration. He's saying that must be cultivated by displaying patience and cooperating with his efforts to reach a peace settlement with Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. So even he, as even we stated at the beginning, is nervous about Mr. Trump's administration's push for peace, because it's going to lead Israel down a dangerous path of having to give up concessions that they cannot give up. And he's saying, well, Mr. Trump's going to have a go at this, so we need to sit down and be patient with him, and we need to show him that it's not our fault that there will be a breakdown in the talks and that it's the Palestinian side that has the issues here. But they're worried about it because Mr. Trump is a volatile figure who is prone to wanting to get his way, and prone to, in some cases, emotional decisions based on whether it looks like he's getting his way or not. And we could see a negative backlash against the Israelis from Mr. Trump if Mr. Trump pushes so hard for a peace deal, and the Israelis won't budge, and what they see as being really specific lines that they cannot cross for the survival of their state. So Mr. Liebler, he rightfully so too, does put this as number one in the big threats that Israel faces. He also talks about the fact that, this is his point three, that a successor to Mr. Netanyahu must be groomed. He writes, there is a consensus, certainly among those who admire Netanyahu, but even among those who loathe him, that he is currently the leader most capable of successfully navigating the complex diplomatic challenges confronting us. And this is entirely true. Netanyahu is seen as the protector of Israel. Conversations with Israelis all the time, this is what comes up. They might not like Mr. Netanyahu as their leader, which I don't think many Israelis have liked their leaders just in general. But nevertheless, they recognize that he is the man that can best navigate this difficult situation that they're in right now with Iran, with the United States, with Europe, with all of these nations that seem to have growing preoccupation with the state of Israel. He's the best man for the job, and yet there isn't anyone else around that looks to have the handle on the situation, or the level of or just the level of understanding needed to ensure that the state of Israel survives. So who's going to be next? A successor to Mr. Netanyahu must be groomed. Another one of his points. He also says that there is, he talks about this relationship that needs to develop with the Sunni Arab leaders, Sunni Arab world, and some pragmatic leaders in those countries, in Saudi Arabia and the other Gulf states, as well as Egypt. And it's time to really ensure that those relationships, that we make the most, or Israel makes the most of this current hatred, or this current desire from these states to counter Iran's rise, that does put them allying with the Jewish state, because the Jewish state's obviously enemy number one of Iran. Now that they have this common ground, they need to work, Israeli leaders need to work to ensure that this alliance grows stronger. But then he does write that Israelis should be under no illusions that anti-Semitism is so deeply ingrained in the religion and culture of these countries that we must not be tempted into regarding them as conventional allies. And that's certainly true. While the governments of these countries might, in a relationship of convenience, ally with Israel, there is rank anti-Semitism throughout. It's ingrained in the populations of those nations. But with those points, he gives obviously a few more, and I'll definitely link to this article. I think it's important to understand that the state of Israel right now. I'll link to this article in the show notes. But when he gets down to the conclusion, it really did just stun me, some of his terminology that he uses here, because he goes through 9 points of difficulties facing the Israelis, and I think the last point, well, what he says in the conclusion, is a far greater threat, a far greater danger to Israel than all the previous 9 points that he lists. And this is what he says. These are some of the major challenges currently confronting Israel. They may seem formidable, but when viewed in the context of what we have faced over the 70 years, we have never been so self-reliant or as powerful as we are today and in as optimal a position to defend ourselves. So notice here that he says that these things are difficult, but we've never been more so self-reliant or as powerful, in fact, than we are right now. This feeling of self-reliance and power, its invincibility in a way, is relatively new for Israel. We sometimes forget how young the Israeli state is, and how it has, throughout its short existence, as far as this renewed state of Israel, let's call it, how much through their short existence they have faced just absolutely insurmountable, huge odds for their survival. Countless attacks from other states, from other nations, terrorism from within, and then pressure from without to give away more and more and more of their land. They have faced amazing threats, and yet they have made them through. They've navigated those threats to come through them, and yet now we're to the point where Israel has to make some decisions, because they are powerful. They're powerful, the most powerful military in the Middle East, and they're an economic giant in the Middle East. And Mr. Liebler says that Israel has never been so self-reliant. Now, we're going to take a short break, and when we're going to come back, we're going to analyze that statement of Israel's self-reliance, and we're going to see that it is that attitude, it is that trend of thought amongst Israelis because of their power, because of their newfound self-reliance. We're going to argue that that, in fact, is the greatest threat facing the state of Israel. We'll be right back.
This is Watch Jerusalem on KPCG.fm. Thank you for listening. They call it the City of Peace. But it is filled with violence. Yesterday, bloody crusades and sieges. Today, terrorism, rocket attacks, and stabbings. Intense international pressure, but no diplomatic solutions. This is Jerusalem. No city has suffered like it. Will there ever be peace? God says yes. There will be peace in Jerusalem, and not just for the Jews. It will be a peace that spreads to all people. How will God bring peace to Jerusalem? Request your free copy of Jerusalem in Prophecy to find out. The answer comes straight from your Bible. Peace is coming soon. Act today. Please visit thetrumpet.com. This is Trumpet Radio, 101.3, KPCG and KPCG.fm. The podcast of each show is available at thetrumpet.com, at KPCG.fm, and at iTunes. Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. We're talking about one of the greatest threats that Israel faces right now, not being a military threat because they have such superior military might and power in the Middle East, but that their greatest threat is their overwhelming self-reliance. Their overwhelming self-reliance. Again, this is what Mr. Liebler wrote in the Jerusalem Post last week, speaking about the threats. He said, "But when viewed in the context of what we have faced over the past 70 years, we have never been so self-reliant or as powerful as we are today." And again, I believe that this thought is a representation of what Israelis believe, that they have never been in a position where they can be so self-reliant for their own protection. And this is, I believe, a great danger because, really, if you look back in Israel's history, the greatest victories that they have won have been forged during times of great vulnerability, when they weren't powerful, when they couldn't afford to be self-reliant. Looking into Israel's history, it's the times of plenty. If we go back even to ancient Israel's history, it's the times of plenty, the times of self-reliance, the times of supreme power, when Israel should in fact be most concerned. That's when Israel is in its greatest danger. Now, if you are listening to me say that Israel, the greatest threat to Israel right now is its self-reliance, if that sounds preposterous, then you really need to understand more of Israel's history. Now, it is true that up to this point, Israel has faced threats from all around. And yet those threats and the precarious position Israel has found itself in did force it, in looking back in its history, in many ways to rely on miracles to get them through. To actually try their best and do what they could. But at the end of the day, they knew that they were vulnerable. They knew that they didn't have the power in themselves to overcome the adversaries that they faced. Now, if we're talking about the War of Independence and the Six-Day War, these victories were acknowledged at the time as miracles. Israel didn't have the power themselves. They couldn't afford to be self-reliant. And look how the victories came. How did that happen? Well, as those generations die out that fought in those wars, that saw those miracles, the memory of those times fade. And there's less people to remind us that the state of, or the renewed state of Israel was forged, yes, with blood, for sure, with toil, with overwhelming sacrifice by so many families, but it was also forged in miracles. Now, there was an article posted on Facebook from Watch Jerusalem a couple of months ago, and it talked about some of these miracles. And we had this response from one Israeli saying that, "I have seen many miraculous things happen in Israel." This is a response from an Israeli man. "But no miracles. God and miracles are not a factor. Human belief in God is the reason that Israel exists, it and needed to exist, and still has to fight to exist." He's saying that a belief in God is important because without that we might not have come here. But God isn't a factor. God doesn't perform miracles for us. Miracles were not a factor in Israel becoming a state, in Israel winning the wars that we have in the past. Then he writes, "Promoting humanist actions developed by centuries of evolution, biological and cultural, is the only way to end this conflict. Faith, believing despite evidence, is not a virtue. Beliefs and actions based on reason is the only hope for a better future." So that's what he says, and he is he's a 70-year-old, so that was kind of surprising. But if you look back at what the people that were there and fighting, or a number of them that were fighting, that were reporting on the Six-Day War in particular, that's not what they said. They said that there were miracles, actual miracles. Now, none of Israel's accomplishments in the Six-Day War was as important as the capture of East Jerusalem, and we're going to be celebrating the 50th anniversary just in this next week or so of that event. The capture of East Jerusalem gave them the access to their most holiest site, obviously the Western Wall. And when that happened, you know, soldiers broke out in songs and prayers. And at the time that that happened, that victory over East Jerusalem happened, the troops, the generals knew that God had directed the battle, and they weren't even afraid to admit it back then. This was what the commander, Rafael Itan, said. He led the paratroopers of the 35th Brigade. He said, into East Jerusalem, he said, "Apparently someone in heaven was watching over us. Every unintended action they took and every unintended action we took always turned out to our advantage." Sure, God didn't strike them with fire and brimstone from heaven, but he said that this was unfathomable how the victory took place. Everything they did, absolutely everything that they did that they didn't plan, turned out bad. Everything that we didn't plan that we did turned out to our advantage. Then, following or reporting on the victory in the Six-Day War, the military correspondent for Haaretz newspaper, he summed up the Six-Day War this way, admitting, quote, "Even a non-religious person must admit this war was fought with help from heaven." That's what Haaretz said. Now imagine that coming out of Haaretz today. that correspondent would be fired on the spot, and maybe not even just Haaretz, maybe the other papers in Israel as well, maybe many of the papers in Israel, that they would be unwilling to recognize, or maybe the memory of that time has become so distant that they wouldn't agree with that statement. Quote, even a non-religious person must admit this war was fought with help from heaven. That's what was said just after the Six-Day War. Now, another incident, the IDF Director of Operations, Major General Asa Wiseman, was asked by Mr. Levinon, he was a father of a fallen pilot, how he explains the fact that for three straight hours, the Israeli Air Force planes flew from one Egyptian airstrip to the other, destroying the enemy planes, yet the Egyptians did not radio ahead to inform their own forces of the oncoming attack. So he was asked, this Major General of Operations, the IDF Director of Operations, who later became the State of Israel's president. How did that happen? 3 hours. We're flying around, destroying Egyptian airstrips, and yet the Egyptians did not radio ahead to tell their colleagues what was happening. At that point, Mr. Wiseman, he lifted up his head and exclaimed, the finger of God. The finger of God. Now, you could say, well, he was just he's just being figurative there. We can't explain it, I guess. And they obviously, made a mistake there. But no, he was saying that the finger of God made that happen. Now, there are plenty of other incidents and reports of incidents of miracles that happened in the Six-Day War. And, you know, after that time, leaders all over Israel, secular or otherwise, they recognized that victory in that war could not be attributed to just the Israeli military machine. Remember, this was a fledgling nation which, by all accounts, was far less in number and materiel than its enemies. And yet today you have people commenting on Facebook that, no, this don't be, you know, get a hold of yourself. This wasn't a miracle at all. We were responsible for that victory. Yes, the odds were unlikely, but we were able to overcome. We were able to fight back the enemy, and we did all that on our power. But that commenter on Facebook is not alone. This is what George Friedman wrote from his piece on the Six-Day War in June 7th last year. He said that Israel waged the perfect war as much as this is possible. It had superb intelligence, struck with strategic and tactical surprise, rapidly broke the Egyptian command structure, and then systematically secured both the West Bank and the Golan Heights. Most importantly, the Israelis established a reputation for military invincibility that remains today. It uses this reputation to shape the psychological framework of the region. Israel's performance in the war was an extraordinary military achievement. It was also the last time Israel either maintained control at the beginning of a war or achieved its intended strategic outcome. So he's saying that this was purely a result of Israel's superior military. And what did that do? It created a dangerous air of invincibility in Israel. Well, I put dangerous in front. He said an air of invincibility. And that is getting back to this point that self-reliance, when you become strong enough to believe that you are self-reliant, that's when you're on dangerous ground. When you start taking credit for things, when credit actually belongs to God, you're on dangerous ground. This is what the editor-in-chief, Gerald Flory, of Watch Jerusalem, wrote in his book, Jerusalem in Prophecy, a foundational book to understand the Israeli-Palestinian crisis, the birth of the State of Israel, and the prophecies of what Israel faces in the future. And you should request this at Watch Jerusalem. Again, it's called Jerusalem in Prophecy. He said, quote, just one sentence here, the Jewish nation was born and sustained by godly miracles. That's a fact. And going back to the Six-Day War, if you're alive at that time, even if you didn't believe in God, as the Haaretz writer did not, he said, even a non-religious person must admit that this war was fought with help from heaven. That's what he said, if you were back then. So you would believe that statement if you were reading it 50 years ago, that the Jewish nation was born sustained by godly miracles, or at least have wouldn't be so sure of your opinion. But how is it now? What do people believe right now? Well, Israel is almost invincible militarily, at least in the region. And we can be self-reliant. We are self-reliant. It's when you feel powerful, it's when you feel self-reliant, that there isn't a need for miracles anymore. There isn't a need for help. This is what the prophet Jeremiah famously stated. He said, "Thus says the Eternal, cursed is the man that trusts in man and makes flesh his arm, and whose heart then departs from the Eternal." Basically, cursed is the person that trusts humans, who makes flesh and blood his strength, who makes military might his strength. That man is cursed. Again, this quote from Jerusalem Prophecy says, "The Jewish nation was born and sustained by godly miracles," and that is a truth. But, Mr. Fleury continues, it still refuses to trust God. There is a clear connection in ancient Israel's history, how national self-reliance led to imminent danger. And as the nation of Israel right now does feel strong enough to protect themselves, does feel strong enough and has enough, that they have enough military might and power to defend themselves from any enemy, that they can afford to be self-reliant. Again, looking to history, would have to say that because of those feelings, Israel is in imminent danger. Now, the Jewish Bible is full of warnings of precisely this nature. And I do want to read a couple of passages of scripture. First is Deuteronomy chapter 32 and verse 15. It says this, "But Jeshurun waxed fat." So this is just another name for ancient Israel. "Waxed fat and kicked. You did wax fat. You did grow thick. You became gross." And then what did he do? "He forsook God and who made him and had contempt to the rock of his salvation." So basically it's describing a situation that we could describe Israel in right now. Israel is fat in the sense that they are economically strong, they're financially strong, their military is strong, and they have become, because of that, unreliant on God. They don't need him anymore. They are strong enough by themselves. They have abandoned God because of that. See, it's when we're fat, when we're successful, when we think we're strong, when we are self-reliant, then we think that we don't need God's help anymore. We don't need those miracles, even though the state of Israel was born and is sustained or has been sustained by miracles. We just don't think we need them anymore. We actually scorn where that salvation came from. We make light of it. And that, again, is the dangerous position to be in. If you look at Israel's history anciently, if you look at Judah's history anciently, we're full of examples where Israel is blessed by God, and then after that blessing comes, the people forget. They forget how they got that blessing, how they got to be so strong, how they got to be so invincible, and they take credit for themselves, and then a dramatic fall is just on the horizon. And then that's the trend of ancient Israel's history. And I don't see why we should believe that modern Israel's history would be any different if we do believe in those ancient scriptures. Here is another quote. This one's the very famous passage in Deuteronomy chapter 8, which talks about how God brought them into the land, or he was about to bring them into the land. This book of Deuteronomy was recorded or takes place in just the last months before they entered the promised land, after coming through those 40 years of wandering the wilderness. And God was about to bring them into this beautiful land. He was going to produce it by miracle, their victories. And then he said, in verse 11, This is Moses writing, Beware lest you forget the Eternal your God and keep not his commandments and his ordinances and his statutes, which I command you this day, lest when you are eaten and are satisfied and have built your goodly houses and you dwell therein, and when the herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and your gold is multiplied and all that you have is multiplied. So you could say when you're doing really well, when it looks like, well, we could be pretty self-reliant. Well, Moses tells them to beware. Beware that after all this, you forget. You forget that it was God that gave you all those things. Dropping down to verse 17, Moses says to beware that you'll say in your heart, it's my power and the might of my hand that has gotten me this wealth. But then he says, Moses writes, but you shall remember if you're thinking this way, if you're thinking that we are now self-reliant because of what we've done, then you shouldn't forget that he gave you power to get wealth. That's what really happened. It was by miracle that you're even able to have a state, to produce the wealth, to feel invincible. It was God at the very beginning of it, and it was through his miracles that it took place. And really, as Israel gets older, and yes, gets more seemingly powerful, that the generation that remembers those miracles that God provided for the state also dies out. It was always the responsibility of the previous generation, whether in biblical times or now, to teach the next, to remind them of what God had provided, that God provided by miracles, that God provided victories. But it seems that humans are really incapable of doing that, of acknowledging the true source of their blessings and miracles, state of Israel or even in personal lives. And they forget to tell the next generation that, well, here in Israel, Judaism, state religion, at least the main religion of the state, and we have them reciting these very passages often. And Moses telling them, well, tell your sons what happened, how you came through the Red Sea. Tell them how I, by divine miracle, struck down Egypt. And they do that. They do that. Yet where is the telling the next generation of the more recent miracles? The memory of the War of Independence and the Six-Day War especially. And how at the time, yeah, even going back to that Heretz quote, I just think is so, so powerful. Again, even a non-religious person must admit this war was fought with help from heaven. How many times are students, children today taught that? That it was God that provided those miracles. But as I said, it seems humans are incapable of following through on that command. And if you look into the Bible, the period of the Judges makes this so, so clear. Judges 2 verse 10 says that once this next generation died out, that's the generation of Joshua's time that took the promised land and that knew God was providing them the miracles to make those victories happen. They knew it. And yet Judges 2 verse 10 says, and also all that generation were gathered unto their fathers. That's when they died. The generation that saw those miracles, which is where we are right now in Israel. If you go back to the Six-Day War, that generation is dying out. And there arose another generation after them that knew not the Eternal, nor yet the work which he had wrought for Israel. They didn't know the miracles. They didn't know the work which God had wrought for Israel. Now, there's a generation growing up in Israel right now that doesn't know the miracles that God has provided to give the Jews a homeland. This is the greatest danger that the nation faces. It's not the threat from Iran. It's not the movements around the world, the BDS movement to delegitimize Israel. It's not the push towards trying to get Israel to negotiate away more land. It's not Hezbollah in the north. They've faced far greater threats than this, Israel has, in times past, when they were in a far more precarious position, and yet they were delivered from them. So what would you say is the biggest threat? Well, I believe The greatest danger that they face now is their feeling of their invincibility. Because it's when you feel invincible, it's when you feel self-reliant, that you are no longer in need of God. And that's when you forget to acknowledge that the state of Israel was born and sustained by godly miracles. Now, if you want to read more of the backstory of those miracles, also, again, what Israel is facing currently and what the Bible says Israel is going to face very soon on the horizon, please request this book by the editor-in-chief of Watch Jerusalem, Jerusalem in Prophecy. You can do that by going to watchjerusalem.co.il and clicking on the literature tab and just clicking, ticking a box, putting in your address. We'll send you a hard copy, or if you can, you can just read the PDF right there online as well. It's free. Please read it, because you'll see that although Israel is in a very dangerous position right now because of the way that they're thinking, that danger is going to end, and there is going to be a solution to the state of Israel that presents itself, which will bring it finally the lasting peace that it does desire. You've been listening to Watch Jerusalem. Again, I'm Brent Nachtigall. If you'd like to send us some feedback, you can go ahead and do that, and sending your emails to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. Don't forget to check into the website this week. We're going to be putting some stuff with some material up on Mr. Trump's visit and what it means for Israel in prophecy as well. Thanks for listening.